And if you have questions for us, you can email us healthreport@abc.net.au. And Catherine has done just that, Norman. We were speaking last week, I think it was, about osteoporosis and osteopenia. So basically bone loss and bone disease. Catherine's been recently diagnosed with osteopenia and is curious about the options available to her because her mum had osteoporosis and she could see how hard it was. And she just wants to know basically whether osteopenia is a marker on an inevitable road to osteoporosis or if there's stuff she can be doing now to protect herself.
You and I must really do a program on this perhaps early next year because we had a lot of response to our discussion about osteoporosis and osteopenia. So osteopenia and osteoporosis are part of a continuum as measured by the DEXA scan and your bone density. And there's a relatively arbitrary point at which you're defined as having osteoporosis. So you move along this continuum from osteopenia to osteoporosis, which is obviously Catherine's worry. And there are things which speed that up. And one of them is a family history. So if you've got a family history of somebody with osteoporosis, then that does increase your risk of moving towards that. Another sign is a trivial fracture. So you fall over and do something. It's not been a big fall, but you end up with a fractured bone. That's a sign that you're heading towards osteoporosis. And there are risk scores that doctors can do, which work out what your fracture risk and so on. One of the complications here is the prescribing rules that the Commonwealth imposes on doctors in terms of when you can get prescribed certain drugs, which stop the process of bone. You think your bone is a static organ. It's not a static organ. Your body is constantly putting in calcium and taking out calcium. In fact, your bones are a resource. They're a source of calcium for the rest of your body. You need calcium in your bloodstream to control, for example, your heartbeat, how nerves operate. So calcium is really important in your body. And one of the ways your body controls the calcium level is by taking it out of your bones when it needs calcium and putting it back in. We absorb calcium from the diet pretty inefficiently. So the bones become this, it's a very active organ. Now, when you've got osteopenia and osteoporosis, the balance of that calcium metabolism is, if you like, a leak of calcium from the bones into the blood. The resorption of calcium is greater than the laying down of calcium. Now, there are drugs which stop or slow down that resorption. They have their own problems, but they do that and slow down the process towards osteoporosis. And it's a delicate decision on the part of your endocrinologist about what point on that process that you start getting treatment. Now, there are interventions that can help, such as improving your diet, making sure you've got lots of calcium. Calcium in whole food is probably more effective than calcium supplements, although people have tried calcium and vitamin D. It's controversial as to whether that works. Probably doesn't, but that's something for your endocrinologist to recommend to you. What does work in terms of helping your bones stay strong and as strong as they are is high impact exercise. Now, you've got to be really careful about that and take advice, and probably your GP working with an exercise physiologist are best to advise you on that. But if you've got a history of osteoporosis in your family and you haven't yet got osteopenia, then walking, jogging, dancing, those sorts of things where you're actually landing on the ground with a degree of impact are very good for strengthening your bones and encouraging the body to lay calcium down in your bones rather than absorb it out. So there are lifestyle measures, and you've certainly got to stop smoking. That is really not good for your bones if you do smoke. But nobody who listens to the Health Report podcast smokes.
Well, like you say, Norman, there was more than one question about osteoporosis and bone health. So I think we're going to have to come back to that next year, as you say. And then just a piece of feedback from Cheryl. So you had the interview last week with the clinical study into whether laser therapy works on rejuvenating vaginal tissue for postmenopausal women. And Cheryl's a 57-year-old woman. She's been suffering symptoms for a few years now. She also has thrush commonly. And she's saying, given that the outcome of the trial that we spoke about last week saw no change, she's struggling to see the reason that this surgery is being offered. Can we give some insight?
Well, it's really an insight into the behaviour of professionals. It's not, by the way, I'm not defending doctors or gynecological surgeons here, but a lot of professional groups cling to what they believe works. So, for example, you still get, this is one of my hobby horses, despite 30 randomised trials which show how you teach children to read and write using phonics, you still have student teachers being taught alternative ways to teach kids to read and write which don't work. And so professional groups cling to stuff that doesn't work. And doctors are no different from that. It happens in all professional groups. And so sometimes the way you pay people can make a difference. But even when you compare salaried professionals to people who are paid piecework, who are going to make more money because they do something, the behaviour is actually quite similar. It's about professional groups and what you believe actually works and wanting to help the patient. So you will have gynaecologists who think this is marvellous. They get improvements, but they don't realise that the improvements are no better than placebo. And sometimes what's got to happen is that the people who fund medical care have got to stop funding things that don't work. It's called low-value care, and it's something that we will return to in the health report in 2022, now that we're getting over COVID a little bit. It's been a favourite theme of the health report over the years, but it's called low-value care, where we waste money on stuff that doesn't work, and we should be spending money on what does work.
So for Cheryl, who's obviously listening with interest because this is something that's affecting her, what does work?
Well, I would refer to Cheryl back to last week's program. I have listened to the podcast, but there are various treatments. There's estrogen and estrogen cream and various other things that our expert talked about there. And essentially getting referred to a menopausal clinic. And many GPs are expert in treating menopause anyway. Sometimes short courses of hormone replacement therapy can work, but you've got to be careful with that over the long term. But those are things that you need to discuss with either with your GP and, if necessary, with a gynaecologist who specialises in menopause and is not addicted to laser therapy.
Well, that's it for this week's Health Report. Of course, if you've got questions, please send them to healthreport@abc.net.au.
We'll see you next time.
See you then.